You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Joining me today, Tony-winning director Alex Brightman, Mark Kaufman, executive vice president, Warner Brothers Theater Ventures, and Beetlejuice himself, Alex Brightman. Let's dive back in. Mark, can you just walk us through real quickly, you know, reading, 29 hour, you know, what were the markers along the way?
So we did some 20 hour readings, and after each one, we did work sessions, like Alex said, in whether it was hotel rooms or wherever they were. And then we ended up doing a workshop downtown. And
in the first act, I think.
The first act. And then the second act, we did with them sitting at stands. Didn't we have them?
For that one,
right,
yeah.
Right, for that one. And then I think we did another 20-hour, and I think that was... And then we went to D.C. I know we did something in... We didn't do a 20-hour in between D.C. And Broadway, we actually started rehearsal a little earlier so we can do the changes we wanted between D.C. and New York.
I think the only thing you're missing out of that is they did a couple of movement and choreography labs that I think necessary because, and they were outside of sort of the regular rehearsal stuff that I was brought into a little bit of, but it was mostly like pre-production people and dancers that our choreographers, Connor and Nancy, would bring in just to throw choreography on some, them and see it and film it and look at it and like football tape and be like, that doesn't work, this works, that works. But they did it a couple of times in between these
29-hour
readings. And
that's right. Yeah, I think it was like every 6 months roughly we'd do something. We'd like, did a reading, 6 months, did a reading, did a workshop of the first act.
Can you come in and try this suit on? It was like,
Yeah, and then
like
lots
that.
Of stuff in between. It really was a full-time job for... Like in a full-time job, you're very excited to go to work for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really exciting. And seeing it evolve. I mean, even before going backwards, when we used to sit in those Sunday afternoon, we sat in the hotel room with the creative team, and Eddie would play the music. When Eddie first came on, and he would play the songs, and he would read Beetlejuice, and the guy, and everybody had a part, including... I think I even read, which was scary, but...
Yeah.
And it was just... It was a great process, but... You know, everybody was so invested in it. That's the greatest thing about it is that everybody kind of fell in love with it. So it wasn't like you had to, here's your schedule. Can we try to fit it in? Everybody would come to us and be like, we're going to try to work this into our schedule because it was just something fun to work on. And I think, by the way, that shows on stage. And one of the things I've gotten from a lot of people is, wow, your show's really fun. And it starts from the other side of the stage, you know, where Alex is standing and where Alex is sitting, and it brings it, you know, it's back and forth.
Well, it's an extraordinary process, and you know, you typically for a show that doesn't have all these special effects and pyrotechnics and smoke and characters and oh my gosh, you know, it's hard enough. It's hard enough to just. See what you have working in hotel rooms, working until you get it in front of an audience, just to see it on its feet.
Right.
And so I'm sure when you went to D.C., that was really your first time in front of a real audience.
Certainly that many. Yeah. I mean, we had like little audiences here and there, but they were mostly friendly because we knew them or they were other showbiz folk. This was the first time for us that we got it in front of muggles.
Right, exactly. And so listening to those muggles is such an important part of the process.
Oh, my gosh, huge.
What they respond to, what they don't respond to. And so, you know, if you want to talk just about the experience of maybe your expectations and what worked, what didn't, and that you know, and how you guys dove in with the work ethic that you established all along to
just tackle.
Amazing
to walk out onto the street of D.C. in without makeup on and sort of a hoodie on and hearing sort of like older people being like, there was a lot of swearing. I didn't care for the swearing. Yeah. And kind of thinking to yourself, you hear that a couple more times, you're like, I think we're going to cut some of the swearing. Because
yes.
You do have to listen to your audience.
There was a different tone in D.C. Yeah. And, you know, it was more, we sort of skirted the line with raunchy. And it was unnecessary. And that's what we found in New York, is that it really was unnecessary because we went from, the intention was to be irreverent. And somehow it got a little bit away from us, but that's why you go out of town. I mean, you have to learn these things because we, like Alex just said, we had a lot of friends, and they're not always going to, they're supportive, but they're not always going to tell you, the difficult things that they need to say. Mm-hmm. That audience told us, and that's why, then we came back to New York, and Alex and the creative team literally rolled up their sleeves. And they could have, there have been stories, Dory, you and I have discussed this, where the creative team has said, this is a challenge I can't face, or they just sort of put it, put in the work, but don't really put in the work. You guys really, you wrote new songs, you worked on characters, relationships, you rewrote the whole new number, the whole opening number, kept the same idea of the number, but moved it around a little bit.
And Beetlejuice as a character changed.
Yes. Changed fundamentally.
His intention from the jump changed, that he wasn't starting as this conniving trickster and who cares, I don't care about anybody, just myself. But what we found, and it wasn't me, it was the writers and the other, they said, what if it was, and it was Alex who said, what if his intention is that Beetlejuice is literally invisible? So what that means, what makes him relatable, is that we all felt not seen before. So that is the most human thing about him. And so just from the top, him saying, I just want somebody to see me, makes him instantly more relatable and has more of a drive and an engine for the show, rather than, I just want to be alive so I can keep messing things up.
Yeah, you're rooting for it.
You completely, from the top.
Absolutely.
I think we were realizing we created a lot of obstacles for ourselves that we didn't realize were there. Because what happens, and I'm sure you'll agree about this as a producer, everyone around this table has versions of this, that something that can be so charming in a workshop or a reading, as soon as you put lights and makeup and scale and a 12-foot gap into the front of the front row, the all that kind of the warmth and generosity of spirit of the actors and that sort of like collective thing that happens in a rehearsal room when you're seeing a reading or a workshop can evaporate in ways that no one ever intended, and so what we realized was that things that sort of these wonderful actors could elide just because it's Alex Brightman and Sophie Ann Caruso and Carrie Butler were actually pointed up in this, and so we really need to dig into the text and the design and the direction, and it affected performances as well. And the thing that was really wonderful and made me just like fall in love with everyone working on this was no one dug in their heels, as Mark said. Everyone was like, okay, we all went back to see the show in the final week. The performers had all this information about what was working and what wasn't working for them. The designers were seeing it. The writers were seeing it with fresh eyes. The producers had amazing thoughts. And then we all sort of said, okay, well, let's make a list. And you know what? Let's not be precious. Let's do everything. And so I think we had this list. You carried it around.
I carried it around literally. It was in my jacket. I had a folded version of it in my jacket so I could refer to it when people stopped me on the street.
And what it did was it created even though you've been working on it for 9 years at that point, maybe 10 years, it creates an utter lack of preciousness. So, for example, we get to the final run through in the rehearsal room before moving to the theater to Broadway. And we look at each other and we're all like, that Adam and Barbara song in Act 2?
Oh my God.
It's good. It was a new one. It's not, energetically. It's like, let's be brave enough and say, what about a new song that we could add during tech? And like Rob McClure and Carrie Butler, to their credit, were like, okay. So while we were
teching, more freaked out than they were, I think.
While we were teching Act 2, they were up in the lobby, by the bar in the Winter Garden rehearsing Maitland's 2.0. We got some props and then teched it in. And then, there were a lot of examples of things like that. And just releasing yourself and saying, we know where we're headed. Let's not get stuck on what's there or what's not there. It's a really cool, I'm sure someone's written a spiritual book about this lesson, but it took me many years to learn it.
Wow, this is why I love theater so much. It's just amazing what.
Also, by the way, it took them that long to create this world. So by the time we got to things like this song isn't working or I don't think this is right for this world, the world existed. So all we had to do was open ourselves up to go and to be honest with ourselves and go, it doesn't live in this world. Because everyone that was on stage found a tone very quickly.
Right.
And the minute something didn't work, it just shined really brightly. And you could, no one needed to kind of be subtle about it. They were like, that doesn't work. Yeah. You can see it. It literally, it's a sore thumb. That doesn't work. And we'd cut it. And it was nice. It was nice to have the permission to do it. But it's because these guys built the world that everyone trusted that we were able to go, this isn't our Beetlejuice. It's not.
And Eddie and Anthony and Scott, I mean, these are the most extraordinary rares. And they're just selfless and inventive. And we're just like, let's keep going. Let's try harder. Like, it was extraordinary. I mean, we really like, you know, the three of us you're talking to were like a part of the reimagining of this.
Right.
But it was that. I mean, it's totally them. We are at their service. And
it also was sounds like the same writer. I mean, that's the other thing that's very rare, I find, as an audience member when you see musicals, is you're able to see where the sort of dog ears are in the show. And you go, this person left it here, and then this person took over here, and then this feels like a song because this person wrote it. I'd be very hard-pressed if I was an audience member to think, I think the book writers must have had some input in the lyrics, and they didn't really. They spoke such a similar language by the time we got there that it just was seamless. So it all feels like the right show.
It's the dream.
It is. It's the total dream.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, at the same time that this massive creative process has, you know, the dedication that you all had, the whole team had, and all the changes and all the work, you had another little show happening pretty much at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, just a little tiny thing. Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
That must have been challenging.
Yeah, it was fun because these things feed each other, you know, and I learned things from both shows that applied to either show. I think one of the things that's part of this conversation is things applies to either of those properties in the shows that resulted from them is the musical theater development process takes so long, right? Aren't you shocked whenever you meet someone who doesn't, and you're like, we've been working on this for 8 to 10 years. That's how long, you know, if you look at In the Heights, Book of Mormon, you know, you name it, it's a long, long development process. Anything that really, truly works really well. You can name on one hand anything that was less than 5 years, right? And what also shifts is the zeitgeist. And so, you know, it's why so few musicals feel like sort of ripped from the, or people like Lin-Manuel Miranda are geniuses because they can predict the zeitgeist in some way, or it's like in their blood in some deep way that they don't know they're a futurist, right? And so for us, when we were starting this show, you know, our reference points were Rocky Horror, Book of Mormon, you know, Bly Bly Andrew Jackson, things like that. And I think, you know, it does take a sort of like, you really have to be able to then step back at certain points of the process and say, you know, what we need, like, in this moment from a Beetlejuice the musical is slightly different than what we thought in 2010. And I think it's you know, that nimbleness is something that I wouldn't have been able to articulate to you a year and a half ago, but I've realized that now.
Yeah, such a good point.
By the way, and just to also say, you did have Moulin Rouge, and which is a major undertaking during this process, and never did I feel you were away from Beetlejuice. Like, we never lost you. Even when you were working on it, you were still like, I've never seen somebody multitask like this guy.
I would co-sign on that statement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So when you are in the final rehearsal and tech for a show, it is never not a massive undertaking. It's never not unbelievably challenging, and you're never not grasping for every second you can get. And add in all the additional layers of special effects. that you guys have on this show. What was it like, Alex, to navigate just this very extraordinary performance, but you're also dodging snakes and pits
and sometimes creating them. This show for me is two different shows. It's the musical and it's the magic show. And so keeping those straight in my head night to night, because both live theater and live magic can go horribly wrong if not given the focus it deserves. That is the ultimate test. When I did School of Rock, it was stamina. That was my entire show. It was just stamina. Get through it. This show is all brain. It's just making sure that things are set up and loaded in the right way. So by the time we got to the rehearsal process, I was hopefully, and it is paying off now, doing hours outside of this, making sure that sleight of hand, which is something I never did before, or sleight of body, you know, like, was as good as it possibly could be, so that we didn't have to waste time on stage making sure I was good with hiding a thumb somewhere. So for me, it was that. Also, in any tech process that I've done now, to steal a line from Neil Brennan, it just feels, before you do previews and even during previews, it feels the entire time that the theater is just filling up with water and you are just hitting the ceiling. And every time you can get something right, it just kind of dips a little bit and then continues. And so by the time you get the show where you need it to be, you've bailed out all the water. But that is exactly how a tech and preview process feels to me. It is as if you are drowning and trying to do the two things I just said, while also just trying to keep your head above a continuously rising water situation. But once you get beyond it, it's just lovely. And there's no more water. And then when there is, there's a little leak here and there. Then you know exactly what to do. We've been running for, 8 months now? Now, there's nothing that could happen on stage, knock on wood, that we couldn't deal with.
Amazing.
But it's true. I mean, it's like we know what we're doing now.
Yeah.
And it's nice. I think about that when we start a rehearsal process. I think forward and going, man, it's going to be so cool when we're just doing it. Because it takes so long to do it. And when we're just doing it, it's blissful. This isn't the job. The job is auditioning and maintaining this.
Yeah.
The on stage every night is I can't wait to get to. That's the easy part.
Well, the audience is going crazy for it. I mean, my office is literally over the Winter Garden.
Oh, yeah.
And so No, it's wonderful. I'm constantly doing double takes because I think you're walking by me all the time in costume.
Oh, right.
Because there's so many people who go see your show in costume.
Yeah.
And that's got to be a lot of fun and a little strange to look out in the audience and see yourself,
yes.
You know, over and over again.
But
it's
wild.
That's the Rocky Horror quality we have that Alex originally talked about, is that, I mean, we knew that there was a big fan base, but we didn't say, hey, come, you know, wear costumes. People did that on their own. So we just said, wow, this is great. And we pivoted right into it.
Yeah.
And we welcomed it. And, you know, even offering during the month of October, we did costume contests. And it was amazing because you walk in there on any given night, and it's not just costumes. What's really impressive to me is the time that our audience takes to put into their costume.
Most of them are homemade. There's like no store-bought things in our audience.
I say the most gratifying is when people are wearing costumes based on
the musical.
The musical.
Yes.
Yes.
Like when you see the Girl Scout, like characters that didn't exist in the movie, you're like, these people have like connected on some deep level to like what it is in the musical. It's really exciting.
It's creating its own cult thing, which is what I think has been what has become so successful about the show, is that it has become what one of my friends said, which I took as a complete compliment. I think it could be taken another way. He said, what this show feels like is you just rode a ride at a theme park and you race the line to get back in line right after you go. Because you just want to beat the rest of the crowds because you know how great it already is and the people behind you don't. And so you want to go back before they get a chance to even figure it out.
Oh,
and now people are
true.
Starting to figure it out. So we're packing the joint. It makes our job very easy because it's nice to have a full house. But it's also nice to have a full house of weirdos and freaks and just like us.
Well, I think in the beginning, you're right, that you did have, there was Beetlejuice fans out there, people who love the movie. But now it's people who love the show that are coming back and bringing their friends and everybody. And that's got to be so satisfying. And just looking to the future, it's just a fun thought to think how in the world schools across the country are going to be doing this show attempting to be you, Alex.
I can't wait for Beetlejuice Jr. Oh, sort of like yes. The middle school versions. A lot of cuts. Well, there'll be a lot of cuts and trims.
Yeah, well, yes, there will be, but but I think the spirit of it, it will exist. And it's funny because when we were talking about stock and amateur rights with different companies, everybody pitching, there was such an enthusiasm. And, you know, we've had other shows, but there was something about this. And when you look at, you know, that the Addams Family is the number one show done in schools this past year. Everybody's like, oh, well, this has that feel to it, but it's its own thing. And it just is, it's exciting. And I agree with these guys. I cannot wait to see, like, oh my Beetlejuice God. In Absolutely. Schools.
I cannot
it's such
wait.
A thrill.
Well, this is why we have to do the podcast about your voice, because you're going to have kids all over the country.
I'll do attempting. A master class yeah. online.
Okay, done. Yeah.
$1,000 for membership, exactly. and I will do it. I'm all just right. trying to make money, you guys.
Well, I see the New York Post headlines, like the vaping deaths you see. Like,
yeah, that's
like
really...
tried to do the Alex Brightman voice yep. in their high school play.
Yeah, and I'm sorry about that, everybody.
There has been just such a giant leap for your show that audiences who've already seen it are racing back, and a whole new audience is discovering it. And a lot of that has to do, aside from great word of mouth, but with TikTok. Do you want to talk about how all that happened?
Again, it's one of those things that sort of happened organically. We had people doing... these videos, and I have to be honest, I didn't know what TikTok was, and you know, I
still
do
don't,
kids.
By the way, and I'm on it. I don't know what it is,
and my kids do, and I was like, and they're like, of course, but you really shouldn't know what it is,
yeah.
And, you know, and it was kind of really exciting to start to see. I mean, it's more than just TikTok, but that's been the major platform. But the fans have not only made these videos, but they even take our songs and they start animating them. I mean, creating animation and like mini cartoons. And they're making these videos on TikTok and they're getting really involved. And it's all costumes and they create scenery. And it. And by the way, it also, it helped that our album has taken off. I mean, right now we've done over 100 million streams in, you know, in 22 weeks. It's incredible. But those things dovetailing together have created this sort of phenomenon. I remember when TikTok was on the cover of Arts and Leisure of the New York Times about maybe 3 weeks ago, there was a picture, and one of them was the picture of Beetlejuice. And we were like, wow, that's kind of cool. But it's just one of these things that kids are able to express themselves, and we've given them something to express, a tool to express themselves with. And it's unbelievably gratifying. I mean, if you look at my Facebook page, every time I see like an animated video, I share it because I'm just trying to show our fans that we appreciate it, because I'm blown away that they actually take the time, and it means so much to us, that it means so much to them.
What's also just really quickly great about TikTok in general for us as a cast is that a lot of us are over the age of 25, 26, but we have one cast member who is 15 years old who has become our sort of ambassador of TikTok. And has become, like, in her own right, and she deserves it, kind of famous on TikTok for being sort of the one that has generated the most content has from us, from our show. And that's Presley, the understudy for Lydia. And she has become such a vital key to not only what we're doing on TikTok, but to explain what it is to me. She's putting me on video, and I go, what did I just do? And she explains it to me, and I nod my head, and I don't know what she's talking about. But she has gained not only a fan base out from Beetlejuice, but people know her now. Just as a quick anecdote, we did the Broadway flea market, and she was selling Do a TikTok with Presley, and they sold out more than anything we sold that was autographed.
Absolutely.
That's been an amazing, as Mark said, a tool on so many different levels. It's really raised money for charity too, which has been great.
Terrific. And yes, and it's amazing, and it keeps going on. And you know, also one of the things that we've also found is whenever we put out a music video or we put out a piece of content, the fans are so excited. So we keep it. It makes us want to create more content. We have things coming out in the next couple of weeks. I'm not going to give anything away, but little pieces of content that we're doing specifically for our fans is basically thank you for being so, so enthusiastic about what we've done, right?
Well, it's a really creative group, right? I mean, these fans are like, they're not just digesting content, they're creating content. And that's the fun thing about TikTok, right? It's incredibly creative minds making quick change videos or like comedy videos, or You know, it's the thing I would like to believe, like if Tim Burton were 15 now, the young Tim Burton right now would be making like amazing TikTok videos, right? you know, because without the means of production, here you are, like you're creating things. And what I love most, I'm just going to speak for myself, are these like amazing Kabuki quick change videos. Because when we hired William Ivy Long, I was like, this is the master of the quick change. And here, like, you know, you've got like the young William Ivy Long's also of using quick cutting to do what he does with a, you know, like a magnet. But,
that's right.
You know, it's the same idea.
Well, I want to say bravo because I think that it's just so challenging to do an ambitious show, period. But then to take a movie, adapt it for the stage, and make it entirely its own in the storytelling, in the visual, in the performance, it's just a massive accomplishment. Bravo to each of you.
Thanks.
And
thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories. Alex Timbers, extraordinary director, Mark Hoffman, producer, Alex Brightman, star extraordinaire. So thank you guys so much. Can't wait to see it again.
And thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to Deep Dive Broadway. And you can find me on Instagram at dory.berenstein or at bpn.fm/deepdivebroadway.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.